Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border, and streaming all over the planet. Welcome back to our program, or welcome to our program. It's Friday. Friday morning, afternoon, wherever you evening, wherever you may be on the earth. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, happy Friday, happy weekend to you. Hope all is well. It's the first hour of our Friday program, which always begins with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment. We have a lot coming up in the rest of the day, but starting right out here with Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders, the longest-serving independent member of the House of Representatives in that body's history, representing the great state of Vermont, now running for the Senate. His website, bernie.org. Our telephone number, toll-free across the United States, 866-440-8466. And if you'd like to drop into our live chat room, of course, TomHartman.com. Bernie Sanders, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here, Bernie. Bernie, yesterday I'm walking by the TV. It was after I got off the air on this program, and I had a couple-hour break, and then I had to fill in for the – didn't have to, but I volunteered to fill in for the majority report for Janine and Sam on Air America. And so anyhow, I'm home, and I turn on the news, and it's CNN, you know, just the regular news, Wolf Blitzer, and he's got Jack Cafferty on there, a guy who is – fairly conspicuous conservative. He spoke, you know, positively, shall we say, of Bush in the 2000 and 2004 elections, gung-ho for the war, all this kind of stuff. And Jack, I'm walking by the TV, Jack Cafferty turns and looks right out the screen at the, you know, us, the viewers, and says the following.
We better all hope nothing happens to Arlen Specter, the Republican head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, because he might be all that's standing between us and a full-blown dictatorship in this country.
And then he goes off into a whole rant about the NSA spying program. What's up? What's happening in Washington, D.C.?
Well, for a start, Mr. Rafferty is not the only conservative in this country who's beginning to catch on that we have the most reactionary and incompetent president in the modern history of the United States, a guy who talks about freedom and freedom and freedom, a man who every speech uses the word freedom and yet is doing more to take away the basic freedoms in this country than any president that perhaps we have ever had. I joined with 70 other members of the House in a amicus brief to make sure that the courts ruled that the president's spying on the American people without a warrant using the NSA is unconstitutional and it's illegal. So we have introduced that as part of an ACLU effort to end that practice. And in the midst of doing that, of course, we pick up the USA Today yesterday and indicating that the goal now of the Bush administration, and I quote from the front page of USA Today, the agency's goal is, quote, to create a database of every call ever made, end of quote, within the nation's border, an anonymous person who knows something about the program said. You know, this is just absolutely incredible. This is Big Brother. This is government that, with an imperial president who thinks he has the right to have the power to list every phone call made by every business, every person in the United States of America. So the hope right now, this is the hope. The hope right now is that the decent Republicans in the U.S. Congress will finally have the courage to understand that they can no longer be a rubber stamp for this president. And frankly, it is a bit embarrassing for Congress and certainly for the Republican leadership to see this information being revealed by USA Today and not by the United States Congress. What is Congress doing? Why is this going on? Why aren't the American people understanding this and knowing something about it? Certainly, why isn't Congress doing something about it? So my hope is, and it may in fact happen, with President Bush's polls, poll numbers plummeting, with these guys hanging on for dear life, you may finally have some Republicans say, hey, excuse me, enough is enough, Mr. President, you're not the king, you have to abide abide by the laws of this country, abide by the Constitution of this country. You can't do anything you want anytime you want it. You can't spy on the American people without a warrant. You cannot have the major telephone companies in this country provide you a list of every call that was ever made. So let's hope that we can make some progress on that.
Bernie, the Democrats in the Senate have had the experience of being spied on by Republicans. Ted Kennedy's computer was hacked into for almost 2 years. They were keeping track of all of his conversations by computer with other senators, other Democratic senators, particularly with regard to the nomination of judges and things. This came out. I mean, you know, it's been exposed. Why are the Democrats not raising the question, Mr. Bush, are you compiling this information and are you listening in these conversations for political purposes?
Tom,
why is this not being raised?
I suspect that that will be raised. I mean, it is. I mean, just think of the enormity of what we're talking about. Think about the business implications, not only the political implications. To know every phone call that you made to anybody is now in a record of the United States government. And this guy continues to talk about freedom. So it is not only of huge political implications, it is of business implications. It is the exact antithesis of what freedom is supposed to be about. And I think what you are going to see, and you are seeing it, by the way, is more and more conservatives. You know what the essence of conservatism, honest conservatism, is supposed to be, Tom? It's limited government. Right?
Yeah.
Getting the government off our backs.
Right.
So, you know, the idea that every phone call being made by through the major telephone companies in America is now on some kind of file or tape in Washington is beyond belief. And you're going to find not just progressives, not just moderates, but a lot of conservatives are going to say, hey, Mr. President, we don't know where you think you're coming from, but this is absolutely unacceptable. So we'll see what happens, but I think you're going to see a lot of people, and not just Democrats, beginning to stand up and say enough is enough to this guy.
Yeah, kingly powers, as it were. Now, yesterday, a bill passed through the Senate yesterday that said that they're going to extend this idea for another 2 years that working people in America should pay a full maximum income tax load. But if you earn your living sitting on your butt around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive, you pay a maximum of 15% income tax. What's with this tax?
This is, again, what Bush Cheney and the Republican leadership are about. These are the people who have given us the largest deficits in American history and have driven the national debt up to $8.3 trillion, $27,000 for every man, woman, and child. These are the people under whom poverty, 5 million more Americans have slipped into poverty over the last 5 years. These are the people under whom the middle class is shrinking and people are working longer hours for lower wages. The only group of people who are doing well economically under Bush and Cheney are the very, very rich. So obviously, given that reality with the middle class shrinking, poverty increasing, what should your tax policy be? Well, obviously, you want to give billions of dollars, tens of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest one-tenth of 1%. Now, doesn't that make a lot of sense, Tom?
Well, I guess it does if you're part of that group, as Bush and Cheney both are. I mean, Cheney got a $6 million tax refund
investments. It is so absurd. I mean, if it wasn't so pathetic, it really would be laughable. What you're looking at under this bill, the bill that passed in the House, I don't know how different it was in the Senate, the bill that passed in the House would enable 43% of all of the benefits to go to the wealthiest one-tenth of 1%, and those are people who are earning at least $1 million a year. So if you are a millionaire, people who are earning $1 million or more, on average, so all the millionaires out there, listen up, because we got some really good news for you. You're going to be getting, on average, a $41,000 tax break, okay? That's for people earning $1 million or more. On the other hand, if there are one or two people listening who are earning less than $50,000 a year, now listen up on this one, because you're going to get really, really excited about this one. On average, you will receive a $10 average tax cut per year from this legislation.
Okay? I can hardly wait.
Now, for that $10, you know, pull over your car to the nearest gas station, and you can, you know, add that to the $3 a gallon you're paying, and maybe, you know,
right
help pay for that. That's your tax break. But if you're a millionaire or more, you're going to get $43,000. So this is nothing more than the Bush-Reagan program of making the very richest people in this country richer while they're ignoring the needs of the middle class and lower income people. It is an absolute outrage, which will drive up the national debt even further, a legacy we're going to leave to our kids and grandchildren.
And Bush is calling it a great victory.
Well, no doubt it is. For his millionaire friends, it is a great victory. We have to acknowledge that.
There you go. 16 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. If you'd like to give us a call, talk with Bernie, 866-440-8466. We'll be taking your calls right after this.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Working together like spokes inside a wheel, they keep this country turning around. Hello, Kansas, wheat field farmer, let me thank you for your time. You work a 40-hour week for a living, just to sing it all down the line.
And welcome back. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. His website, bernie.org. Check it out. And our telephone number, 1-866-440-8466. Hey, Bernie, we've got a bunch of callers I want to get right to. But
okay.
Very quickly, though, I had a quick question for you. Somebody forwarded to me an email from a friend of mine in Vermont that there's some dirty tricks going on in your campaign. Do you want to talk about that, or is that something
we'll worry pass about on? That one later.
Okay, all right. I just thought I'd bring it up. Anyhow, Larry in Seattle, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Congressman Sanders and Tom. I'm an independent motor carrier. In other words, I deliver newspapers. I've got about 500 subscribers. I've talked to at least 300 of them over the past 5 years on the telephone. Administrative law judge, superior court judge, doctors, retired military. Also, over the past 5 years on the telephone, I've talked to several talk show hosts. And I posted many postings on chat rooms, all anti-Bush, very anti-Bush. Bush is the worst president in the world, Bush. Now, am I jeopardizing any of my subscribers because of my political stance?
Well, I mean, all that we know at this point is that the major telephone companies in America have tracked your calls, have listed your calls, and they're on file in Washington, D.C. That's all that we know right now. There's not a suggestion at this point that somebody has used that information. But as Tom indicated earlier, once you have that information, it can be used. We're not saying it is used. But every call that you made, if you are a subscriber to one of those companies, is now on file. File is probably the wrong word. It's on tape somewhere on a computer in Washington. That's what we know.
Matt in Sacramento, California, live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Well, I want to point something out. I talked to his office, and I told the staff this, that in California, our Constitution has a Bill of Rights, and Section 1, Article 1 says, we have the right to pursue and obtain safety, happiness, and privacy. So they just violated my rights and 37 million other people in California's rights under our Constitution.
And that is the point. You know, time and time again, what we're seeing with the Bush administration on a whole host of issues, whether it's campaign finance reform, health care, whatever it is, we know that the Bush administration and Congress, dominated by big money, are not going to do the right thing. The suggestion that you are making is that state by state, people have got to stand up not only to the Bush administration, but to these telephone companies as well and say, excuse me, you know, I signed up with your phone company in order to make telephone calls, not to have my phone calls end up on some file in Washington, D.C. So I think these phone companies have got to be held accountable. Tom, my understanding is that the only major phone company that did not cooperate on this was Quest.
Yes, which ironically is my phone company.
Well, there you go.
They're big out
You're
here.
You're one of the few people in America whose phone calls now are not on file, right?
Yeah, although they were probably tracking mine long before that. Who knows? Good point, Bert.
So what we're talking about is data was filed by AT&T, Verizon, and Bell South.
Yes. Yep. And so on it goes. Jim in Mobile, Alabama. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, hey, good morning, fellas. Great job. Hey, what would stop Bush from creating another 9/11 situation, invoking martial law, and then, you know, negating all the elections and then saying, hey, now I'm the king? Can he do that?
Well, let's not get too far, beyond where we are right now. I think the issue right now is to understand you have a president who, in fact, does not understand the Constitution, does not think that he has to obey the laws. And what we need is an aroused population from California to Maine. We need a Congress to stand up. We need state legislatures to stand up and say, excuse me, Mr. President, people fought and died to make this a free country, and you are not going to take our freedoms away from us. That's what we got to do. If we're vigilant, and look, let's not kid ourselves. The good news here is the American people every day are catching on to this guy. This guy's poll ratings now, oh, what is it, Tom? The third lowest for any president in American history?
Yes. Yeah.
Right. It's 31%. He's going to go down.
Yeah.
So the vast majority of the people are saying, what are these guys in Washington doing? And the immediate political task is that come November, we've got to take away the Republican leadership from the House, from the Senate. And when you do that, by the way, then this president is going to have to account to Congress. He's going to have to account to people like Senator Patrick Leahy of my state of Vermont, who will then be chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, John Conyers of Michigan, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. There will be serious investigations, serious hearings. He will not be able to treat Congress as a rubber stamp anymore. That is the immediate task, in my view, that we face.
But isn't it a tragedy that his behavior is causing people like Jim to ask questions like he
does? Absolutely. Of course it is. Of course it is.
I mean, I don't think anybody would have been asking that kind of question about any president in my lifetime.
No, yeah, I mean,
should we be worried?
Should we be worried? Well, the answer is we always worry, but the answer is not to get paranoid, but to get aggressive in our political work. We have now the opportunity. Every day, this man is being exposed for what he is, and we should be able to sweep house on Election Day.
Well said. 27 minutes past the hour. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Give us a call, 1-866-440-8466. We'll be back with your calls and more right after this. It's 27 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 and a half minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. His website, bernie.org. Strongly suggest you check it out. Great news and information there, and also ways that you can help out Bernie. Shirley in Evansville, Illinois on the line. Hey, Shirley, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yes, I want to make a comment on the government gathering the information from the telephone companies. Without having Quest participating, looks like they have a big piece of the puzzle missing, and especially since Quest services an area so close to the Canadian border. So, you know, if it's legal and it's necessary, why don't they insist that Quest participate in this?
Well, that's an interesting question. And my understanding is that Quest apparently did not think it was legal and proper and refused to go along with it. And I think I don't believe that this is legal. I think before you start assembling files on innocent Americans, you just can't do that. You can't do it without a warrant. They never got a warrant. I think this activity is illegal, and I think the Congress has got to be very bold and rapid in its response.
Pat in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma.
Hello. Hello, Congressman Sanders. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Pat.
What I would like to see is for people in mass numbers get a hold of their phone providers, whether it's landline or cell phone, and tell them that they want to cancel their service and that they want their money back from 2001 until the present day. And I'm sure that that would get the phone providers' attention and let them know that we're not playing around. We're not going to accept their service if they're going to betray our service.
You know, Pat, that's a very interesting idea. I mean, money talks, and I think if these phone companies, and that's AT&T, Verizon, and Bell South, started to hear from millions of Americans who said, when we subscribed with your company, it was not our expectation that every phone call that we made would end up in Washington, D.C., give us our money back, that might send a very, very strong message to these people. I think that's a very good idea.
John in Phoenix, Arizona, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hey, good morning, guys. I love the show. You know what? My only question I don't understand, why is this president not behind bars? I don't understand, what is Congress doing? Why is this criminal not behind bars? That's all I want to know.
Well, before we talk about behind bars, you may want to ask why it is that there have not been any serious hearings or investigations about the war in Iraq, why there haven't been serious hearings or investigations about this disastrous prescription drug Medicare program, not to mention what we're seeing now in terms of assaults on civil liberties. And the answer to your question is, the reason that we have not seen these hearings and investigations is the Republican leadership in the House and the Republican leadership in the Senate see their role as a rubber stamp, somebody protecting the president rather than protecting the American people. And again, if you want to change that, we have the election coming up in November, and my hope is that we can sweep the leadership of the Republican Party out of the House and out of the Senate.
I think it bears repeating, Bernie, and a lot of people don't understand how it works inside the House and inside the Senate.
Right. Let me go over this again, and you're absolutely right, Tom. People don't know this. What happens is when a party controls, say, the House, where I work, they control every single committee. If you're wondering why the Judiciary Committee in the House is not raising serious questions, it is controlled by a Republican who works with the President of the United States, who sees his job is to protect the President rather than to ask the hard questions. Before you can get a bill onto the floor of the House, it has to go through Tom DeLay and his friends. Not anybody can bring a bill to the floor of the House. There is a process. And the Republican leadership will determine what bills get to the floor of the House. Occasionally, you can get an amendment to a bill, an appropriations bill, onto the floor. You can still do that. But by and large, you can't get a freestanding bill in the House. In the Senate, the rules are a little bit differently. But the point that we're making here, and people say, well, how could this go on? It goes on because the Republican leadership has abdicated, in my view, its constitutional responsibility of oversight, of holding another branch of government, in this case the White House, accountable. Just think, friends, when Clinton was president, how there were hearings and investigations every other week. And I'm not just talking about Monica Lewinsky.
He fired his travel agent. They held a hearing about it.
Exactly. And I'm on that committee, so I do know that.
Travel.
And I'm still on that committee.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that there have been zero serious hearings about any activity of the Bush administration. So that's the answer to John's question.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Bernie. Gary in Cleveland, Ohio is on the line. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Not much. How you doing?
Great.
Good.
Yeah, about this phone thing, the records they're keeping on file.
Yep.
I'm real upset about that. I found out about it yesterday, and I got right on the phone with my phone company. They told me that it's just Verizon landlines. It's no cell service. Well, I'm fed up with the point with this administration, the Bush administration. Let's get a bunch of people, get a class action lawsuit, and let's sue them.
That's not about.
That's all they think about is money. So let's take some of their money.
I think that the point that Gary is making at the grassroots, people got to stand up to the phone companies who are cooperating in this illegal program. Without telling customers, obviously, if you want Washington to know about every call that you made, you want the president's friends, you could tell them you want them. But I don't think most Americans want that. So I think at the grassroots level, people have got to stand up and call up the phone company and say, excuse me, I don't want my records. going to Washington. And, of course, we've got to deal with our friends in the White House and in the Congress at election time.
Tim in Saginaw, Michigan.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I want to talk about the air traffic controllers contract that's in front of you in Congress right now, Bernie.
Yep.
We have until June 5th, and they're going to unilaterally impose that on us. This is a very big deal.
I am aware of that.
It's not making the press. I don't know if the public's aware, but we do have a website, fairfaa.com, and they can find out about it. I'd appreciate your comments on the subject.
It's really a rather incredible situation. Everybody who flies, and I do a lot of flying, is deeply in debt to our air traffic controllers for doing a fantastic job. They do a great job keeping us safe. Once we get the damn plane off the ground, we're pretty safe up in the air. Getting off the ground is sometimes another story. But what the government is now doing is negotiating a very hard contract, which to my understanding is asking for cuts in wages, which I think is absolutely wrong. We want the best trained people. We want career people.
Hey, Bernie?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm still on there. What they're going to do is they're going to lower the people we bring in. Right now, you come into the agency. If you're not out of the military, you'll come in at a wage of about $36,000 to be an air traffic controller, and that's out of college.
Right.
And that's your training wage. They want to bring that down to $18,500, which equates to about $7.50 an hour.
Unbelievable.
Holy cow.
Unbelievable.
That's what they're paying people at Burger King here.
Exactly.
So we got thousands of people whose lives depend on the very difficult and stressful work that these controllers do. We're going to pay them what amounts to minimum wage in some
states. And we're going to lose 4,000 controllers here in the next 5 years, 4,000 out of 15,000. And this is a government attack on organized labor is exactly what this is. And people really need to react. We're going to get the shaft on this here in about 3 weeks.
Yeah, we are working on that. I just spoke to your representative in Washington, Ken Montoya, about that just the other day.
Yeah, Tim, thanks for the heads up. Can you give us that website one more time?
Fair, FAIRFAA.com. And this will get you a direct link to all of your senators and congressmen. You can send them an email through there. It's set up through the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. That's my union. I'm a controller as well. I'm actually on my work right now. And we're keeping the skies safe. We're union controllers, and we work hard for an honest day's wage. That's all
Great.
It is.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
But incredibly, the work that these guys do is incredibly stressful.
If they make a mistake,
a lot of people are dead.
Yeah.
So the idea that this administration wants to savage and cut these wages substantially is really incredible. And this is part of the attack on not only unions, which it is, but on working people in general. They want to privatize, have new people coming in doing the same jobs at a lower wage. But meanwhile, when it comes to tax breaks, 43% of their tax breaks go to the richest 0.1%. So this is an administration fighting against the needs of ordinary people and protecting their very wealthy friends.
Steve in Iowa City, Iowa. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Well, congratulations. The NSA is now blind, deaf, and dumb. Because all this program was to take all the phone numbers. They were looking for a pattern like breaking a code, right? The terrorists are using their own phones against us, right? They don't call it the rec to make an order. They have a system they use to give out an order, and that was the code they were trying to break. Congratulations. You tipped them off that we knew they had a system. Congratulations.
Well, USA Today tipped them off, and USA Today, in my view, did the American people a great service. I strongly disagree with you, Steve. I think in the United States of America, ordinary citizens have the right, who have never broken the law, who are law-abiding people, have the right to make a telephone call without the United States government knowing about every call that they make. And what this whole issue is about is that all of us are determined that if the government has any information to suggest that somebody is involved in terrorist activity, all of us want that person investigated, but you have to have a reason to believe that somebody is involved, and you just cannot assemble information on tens of millions of innocent Americans. That's not what a free society does.
It's called probable cause. It's in the Fourth Amendment.
Right.
Yeah. 45 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, our number 866-440-8466. We'll be right back here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Radio operator, do you ever think of me? 'Cause I'm a gleam on some horizon, just too far away to see.
Welcome back to the pill that will help you escape the matrix. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, his website, bernie.org. And Nick in Cutter Hay, Wisconsin on the line. Hey, Nick, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Congressman Sanders, yesterday I was watching MSNBC. I believe it was Hardball, and there was a Democrat and a Republican strategist, and they were talking about this new tax cut. And all of a sudden, this Republican gentleman threw in the fact, or at least he said it was a fact, that this tax cut has produced $150 billion reduction to the deficit. Is that true?
Well, what they're talking about is, you know, every year federal tax receipts go up and down. Since Bush has been in office, in fact, adjusting for inflation and population growth, annual federal revenue has fallen by an average of 0.6% per year. In fact, I think it was last year, federal receipts did in fact go up. And of course they are saying, oh, it's because of all of these tax breaks. But the truth is Bush has been giving tax breaks for years, and the federal revenue has fallen in almost every year. If you look at how we do in terms of dealing with the deficit, if you go back even to the Clinton years, you find that Clinton, who did not give huge tax breaks to the richest people in this country, had a far, far better record in fighting the deficit and, in fact, reversing deficits into surpluses than does Bush. What they're doing is looking at one year, and they're saying there was increased tax revenue, therefore it's working. I absolutely do not think that's the case, nor does the Congressional Budget Office. According to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, 40% of the increase in our deficits are due to Bush's tax cuts since 2001. So I think that is the answer to that question.
Thank you. Albert in Sierra Vista, Arizona. Hey, Albert.
Hey, how you doing? Congressman, I've been told that you know how the NSA is exactly how they do their work. Is that true?
I know. I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
Do you know exactly how they actually mine voice data?
How the NSA does this?
Yeah, do you know exactly how they
do it? No, I do not know exactly how they do it.
I was under the impression that they have made a presentation to Congress and the Senate.
Well, they may have made a presentation to some people on the Intelligence Committee. I am not on the Intelligence Committee.
Okay. Just basically, okay? Basically. Voice recognition has been around for a long, long time. In fact, some businesses use it, like FedEx or Sprint, and you name it. You call some of these people and recognize your voice. Voice recognition, it works this way. Your voice, my voice, anybody's voice is like a fingerprint.
Right.
It can be digitized into ones and zeros, and that is unique to you, me, anyone.
Now,
all phone conversations gone through a switch. A switch, it doesn't matter if you're in a cell phone, pay phone, any phone, everything goes through a switch, a phone switch. You're with me?
Yep.
Okay, now, if you have a computer in front of the switch that monitors every call goes through, and you can somehow identify the person you like to bug on.
Right.
And these computers can say 300,000 conversations per second, and it finds that you are on the phone and we want to listen to you. It gets recorded almost immediately.
Right.
And as you know, every phone call has a caller ID, so they know the phone number you're calling from or you're calling to.
Right, right.
And if you're in a cell phone, you can triangulate within 50 feet of the place you're talking. Now, and that's fine and done if you want to catch bad guys and so on.
Right.
But what about if you start listening to, let's say, Bill Gates?
Right.
And I'm not saying they're listening to Bill Gates, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying.
Well, they may well be listening to Bill Gates. Who knows?
Well, that wouldn't it be fun to listen to Bill Gates if you like to have some stocks in Microsoft and you like to buy or sell? Maybe Microsoft is going to come up with their quarters so huge that maybe you like to buy some stock ahead of time.
No, that's right. No, the implications.
You know,
without getting paranoid, the implications of this for business, for politics, for potential blackmail, is just enormous. And the idea that tens of millions of people are having their records assembled and kept is just not what America is supposed to be about. We've got to end that practice.
David in Bainbridge Island, Washington.
Hi, Tom. I was very disappointed 2 days ago when you gave airtime to a Green Party candidate, governor for Illinois, even though he is a progressive and probably a great man. Any help that you give the Green Party of any state, any issue, you're helping the Republicans.
Okay, I got it, David. Thank you very much. George in Tacoma, Washington. George, you're on with Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I was listening to the fellow call from the air traffic controllers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's my understanding that the phone company that did not...
Quest?
Well, Quest is a union company.
Yes.
And that the people in this country, especially the union people, I did this. I quit my phone company and switched to Quest.
Well, most of these are union companies, aren't they?
No, well, they're partly, but, I don't think AT&T, Verizon, part of their company is union, part isn't.
Hmm.
But when I talked to the guy at Quest, he said that they're 100% union. But anyway, it could kind of send a little message. If people start switching to that phone company, it might show a little power.
Yeah.
There
you go. Bernie?
Well, I think that is a good message. We should tell Quest that we respect the position that they have taken, and we are very unhappy with the other companies.
Yeah, indeed. Congressman Bernie Sanders, bernie.org on the Internet. Check it out. Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom. Take care.
Always great talking with you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. I'm Tom Hartman. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour. Stick around, my friends.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman here with you. Prices exploding at the pump. The price of oil going up and down to over $70 a barrel. ExxonMobil showing the largest profits in the history of civilization. Dan Gaynor is with us. He's with the Business and Media Institute, businessandmedia.org, the website. And Dan, isn't it time to bring competition back to the energy industry by breaking up the oil giants?
Well, of course not. The idea that the oil giants are somehow making exorbitant profits, first of all, is outlandish and a bit absurd. Just because they're big companies, they make big profits. If ExxonMobil had made 1% profit, which we all know is barely keeping their head above water, all of last year, they still would have made close to $1 billion a quarter. That doesn't mean they're making outlandish profits, it just means they're really huge.
But when we look at their actual profits, I mean, I don't represent myself as a financial whiz kid, but I do know how to go to the New York Times and plug in XOM, their stock identifier. In 2005, they had net sales, that is total revenue, net sales of $358.9 billion. Their cost of goods sold was $185 billion, so their gross profit was $173 billion. That's about a 50% gross profit. Then on top of that, they paid $41 billion in salaries and rent expenses, and that left them a net income before depreciation, before you start playing with accounting tricks, of $131 billion. Now, $131 billion, unless my math is wrong, is about a third of $358 billion in total revenues. So that's a 33% income. In
but
fact, they list as their income before tax. This is after they pull out the $61 billion that they're taking as a result of all the tax breaks that the government has given them and Dick Cheney and all these guys, plus $10 billion in depreciation and amortization. They're showing an income of $59,432,000,000. Now, this is the New York Times. I mean, this is Exxon's own numbers. That's 20% of total income.
Actually, but to use the correct figures, I'm not sure what you're quoting specifically from the New York Times, but I'm quoting from Fortune magazine, the 2006 Fortune 500. They have a revenue as percentage of profit as percentage of revenue is 10.6%. It doesn't even place them in the top 100 companies of the Fortune 500.
Well, that would be after they've paid taxes. They paid set aside 23.
You say after they pay taxes, like that's inconsequential. They paid so much taxes, and yet the government's talking about dumping more taxes on them. They're paying billions in taxes.
So here we have a company that is so large that the amount of money that they're paying in taxes is more than dozens of other companies, even making gross revenues. Again, isn't it time to restore competition to the marketplace by breaking up some of these oil giants? This is like John Rockefeller's Standard Oil Trust.
But it's not, because John Rockefeller didn't have to compete on a global market, in many cases with companies that are state-owned entities. And we're fortunate, really, that we have large companies that can compete on a world stage where they are having a very competitive environment with dealing with the national companies, whether it's a nation like Venezuela or other oil-producing nations, where they've nationalized things. So if we did not have, you know, actually competent leadership in the oil community, we'd be in a lot worse shape.
Let me get this straight. Dan Gaynor with the Business and Media Institute, businessandmedia.org. We're fortunate because we have a company that has aggressively lobbied in this country since the time that Jimmy Carter said we're going to become energy independent. We're not going to need oil from the Middle East. We're not going to have our young men and women die in the Middle East. We're not going to have wars in the Middle East. We're not going to have to worry about what Hugo Chavez does because we're not going to import oil from Venezuela. We're fortunate to have a company that so grabbed hold of our government and corrupted it that they shut down the increase of CAFE standards, that they spent $23 million just the oil industry just last year lobbying Congress to preserve their tax breaks and things. We're fortunate to have this?
You say lobbying Congress like they're somehow not supposed to
do this. We're fortunate to have a company that is funding organizations that are telling us that there's no such thing as global warming when civilization itself may be at risk?
We get in a long debate about whether scientists all agree on this issue, and they don't all agree on that issue. But let's try to stick to the one topic at a time. The gas prices. We live in a free society. Companies are allowed to look out for their own best interests, and they do, just as individual stocks.
We live in a democracy, Dan. Yeah. It's a free society that requires that people who are playing the game play the game by the rules of the game. And these guys, you know, corrupting science and corrupting the political process doesn't seem to me like playing by the rules of the game. It seems to me like a rogue corporation.
They're not corrupting the political process. To actually tell politicians how you feel and what you like and what you don't like when major companies that significantly impact the U.S. economy, so if new tax laws somehow would hurt them, they hurt ordinary people who own those stocks, ordinary people who counting on those stocks for their retirement or to help put their kids through school.
I'm just so compassionate for the...
I mean, again, let's go back to the
10%. You've got Fat Bastard here walking off with Lee Raymond, walking off with a $400 million retirement package, and I'm supposed to be empathetic?
No, it's a huge amount of money. So is Katie Couric's $15 million. Frankly, for both of them, for me, are hitting the lottery. I work for a living. I come from a family, blue collar, where we always work for a living. And so, you know, both those amounts of money are...
Then how do you feel about the fact that about $1,000 of your gas bill this year is just going to profits for the oil companies?
But again, they're not going profits for the oil companies. They're going to profits for the owners of the oil companies. And if you want to complain about profits for companies, then you're back complaining about those 100 and other 15 companies that had higher profit margins. Let's talk about Microsoft that had, you know, 30% profit margin. Or frankly, let's just talk about Gannett, one of the companies, newspaper companies that criticizes the oil companies all the time. Their profit margin 16.2%.
Dan, I'm strongly of the opinion that both Gannett and Microsoft are monopolies that also should be broken up.
I think if you go back
and you look at the Sherman Antitrust Act, all three of the companies that you have named, in my opinion, are clearly in violation of a federal law that's been on the book for 125 years now.
Well, clearly Gannett is not a monopoly because there is so much information. There's more information.
How many cities do you know that have more than one newspaper in them outside of New York any longer?
There's an up-and-coming number of those because the Examiner newspapers have launched papers in Washington, Baltimore, and they purchased the San Francisco Examiner. There are free dailies now in Philadelphia.
Locally owned.
Locally owned. Yeah. So, again, they're not a monopoly. There's the Internet. You know, there's TV. There's no way that they're a monopoly.
Yeah, you can watch 800 channels, all owned by 11 corporations.
And you can go to the Internet and watch a gazillion different websites, all owned by a gazillion different corporations or individuals. So, I mean, it's not a monopoly of things, but it's certainly they're making better profits. I'm not saying they're doing anything wrong either. My point is that, you know, we want to demonize successful companies when, in fact, they're just successful, and the people who make the profit aren't some. It's not just some magical, mythical guy who looks like the cowboy from The Simpsons who's all the time going around shooting off six guns.
You don't get it, Dan Gaynor, that the logical endpoint of unrestrained capitalism is you end up with one company or one very small number of companies that act absolutely in concert and don't no longer compete,
so you're
dominating every single industry.
So much regulation, so much taxation, it's laughable to say we have anything close to unrestrained anything.
Then how is it that we only have four major oil companies in this country, and whenever any of them moves their price even a tenth of a cent, all the rest of them move their price a tenth of a cent?
Well, first of all, they're not moving that price. That price is moving on a world market, and that price is generally being impacted.
The price of gasoline is working on a world market. Then why is it that in Venezuela it's 23 cents a gallon?
Because Venezuela happens to sit on a huge parcel of oil that they then sell locally. And I said the price of oil is set on a world market. The price of gasoline is set on spot market.
The price of oil is not set on a world market either. It's set by a cartel called OPEC.
It's set in part by a cartel. If you want to complain about, if you want to break up OPEC, I am all for it. If you can figure out how to do that without going to war, I would be.
Yeah, there's a very simple way. You do what ExxonMobil has been fighting against for 30 years. You make the United States energy independent so we don't have to buy oil from OPEC.
The idea of energy.
This company has been working against the interests of average Americans and against the national security interests of this country for decades. And you want to say, hey, we should hold them up as a pillar of good citizenship?
The idea of saying that ExxonMobil, which is an American company employing Americans, you know, benefiting Americans in stock, is somehow working against Americans.
Against any kind of legislation that's going to make America energy independent. Yes, I consider that bad behavior.
In a global marketplace, trying to assume that we'll be 100% energy independent without some magical invention is also ludicrous.
We were moving in that direction when Jimmy Carter was president, and Ronald Reagan just undid all that stuff as he rode into office with all this money from ExxonMobil and the other big oil companies.
Yeah, of course, he's only funded by ExxonMobil. He wasn't elected by, like, a vast majority of Americans who really wanted to see government reined in. No, not at all.
Good conversation. Dan Gaynor, the Business and Media Institute, businessandmedia.org. Dan, thanks for being on the program today.
It's been a pleasure.
Good talking to you. 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Everybody's talking, no one says a word. Everybody's making love, and no one really cares. There's napkins in the bathroom, just below the stairs. There's always something happening, and nothing going on. There's always something cooking, and nothing in the pot. They're starving back in China. So finish what you got.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com in Washington, D.C. on the line. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom. Yes, indeed. Of course,
you knew it was me on the phone. The government already knew it was me on the phone.
There you go. I understand, Tony. Were you in this press conference with Tony Snow?
I was in this morning's gaggle, which was
the AP story. The AP story, new White House Press Secretary Tony Snow suffered a couple of missteps in his first question and answer session with the White House press corps today. Snow said, quote, "This is just a mess," end quote.
He did. I mean, there were a lot of difficulties. First of all, it was called for 9 o'clock, and then it was moved back to 9:30, and then it actually started at about 9:22, but there was no notice that it was starting at 9:22. I happened to be there already in line, but the network people who usually show up at the last minute because they're guaranteed a place in the front, they weren't there, and they missed the beginning, and they were furious. NBC's Kelly O'Donnell had a fit. So, and she told him off royally about it.
Oh, really? On camera?
Yes. No, there's no camera because it was morning gaggle. They were just off camera. But she told him off. He accepted responsibility for that. He did provide coffee for everybody in his office, which I thought was very ecumenical of him. He was behind his desk. Everybody crowded around. There was absolutely no space whatsoever. And, you know, there were some missteps. He did misspeak. He was asked when Bush was signing the tax bill, and he said he didn't know. And then later on, he was reading the week ahead. Because part of this is procedural, you know. We need information, like when he was meeting with the Secretaries of Defense and State to talk about Iraq and things like that. Mm. And we always get the week ahead on Friday so people can plan, so the networks can plan. And he went out Wednesday, and it said he's signing the tax bill, and he said to the person who'd asked, oh, well, that's when he's doing it. You know, I was wrong. I didn't know. So it's things like that. It's not the kind of mistake Scott would have made. But, and he also said somebody from Russia asked a question, and he said, I'm not answering any international questions or any questions on currency. So I don't know anything about it, and I'm not going to make any mistakes and cause international incidents.
Hmm. Interesting. Is that just, you know, a wise way to start for the first few days and get your feet wet, or is that a guy who is really not prepared for the job that he's undertaken?
I think you have to have a vast amount of knowledge on a huge number of subjects. I think given how volatile the world is and given that it was Russia with whom we're having some tricky moments, I think it was probably wise to just say, I'm not answering at the moment, you know, I'm not up to speed, I'm new on the job. I had no problem with him saying that. I'd rather he said that than say something wrong that could be then mistranslated slightly and then set something off. I'd much rather he did that.
Yeah. With regard to this NSA wiretap and the NSA now data mining operation, a number of memes out there. The first big one, I had a caller in the first hour actually lay it out, that the Bush administration are laying out these thought viruses. The first one being that we're giving away to the terrorists how we're figuring out who they are and where they are. The fact of the matter is, I would assume that terrorists always assume that telephones are not safe things to use.
Yeah.
But the conservatives would have us think that the terrorists are idiots and that the only way that they figure out that they should be careful is by reading the newspapers.
These terrorists who, with 19 guys, a couple of hundred grand, managed to change the planet.
Yeah, as a matter of fact. And secondly, the second thing that I find very curious, the lack of, I mean, just imagine for a moment if Bill Clinton was president and the Republicans discovered that Bill Clinton had directed the NSA to gather up all of the phone records of all Americans and analyze them. And this after he had put a political hack in charge of the CIA, somebody like Porter Gus, only a Democratic version of that. Don't you think that the Republicans would be saying, hey, wait a minute, he wants this information to use for political purposes?
Absolutely. There would be scandal upon scandal. The same talk show host I spoke with today who was saying there's nothing to hide and we've got to cooperate in the war on terrorism and the government's right to do this would be saying the exact opposite.
Then why are the Democrats not raising the question? Why aren't they planting the meme, the thought virus out there, that the reason that the Bush is doing this is because he wants to data mine, he wants to snoop on Democrats? I mean, they already did it. They broke into Teddy Kennedy's computer, and for a year and a half they were reading his computer every day. That's a fact.
I think they're afraid of going to the next step. I really do. I think that they don't have any evidence of it, and unless they have any evidence of it, I think that they're scared. I think that they're scared that if they do that, they'll then be attacked for scaremongering and for being hysterical, and that will undermine any argument they have.
But this is exactly what the Republicans would have done, and I think that they need to put that meme out there. Raise the question. Just say to the Republicans, okay, prove to us that you didn't get this information in order to spy on Democrats.
I think it's a reasonable question.
Yeah. Well, I hope somebody starts asking it. Because that makes it real for people. It causes people to think of it in terms of something other than just terrorism. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. Victoria, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Always great talking with you. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. In the next hour of the program, Al Martin's going to be with us, almartinraw.com, his website. He's the editor of almartinraw.com. He's going to tell us how the oil companies are making over $20 a barrel on all this oil that we are paying so much for, and why we should be thinking twice about that and its consequences. But first, an Iraq alert.
All right, Republicans, line up for duty. Where are you going? Hey!
Off. Time to take a look at what's going on in Iraq. Kicking just a quickly overview here. Off. Keep us all up to date.
Kicking off. Karl Rove, he didn't serve. Dick Cheney, he didn't serve. Tom DeLay, he didn't serve. And George Bush was AWOL. Kicking off.
In Dululaya, four Iraqi soldiers were killed and seven civilians were wounded in clashes between the Iraqi army and insurgents. In Khan Bani Saad, the bodies of four people in military uniform, two of them beheaded, were found in the town of Khan Bani Saad near Bakhaba, north of Baghdad. In Mahmoudia, Mohammad Nasser, a former senior local official in Saddam Hussein's Ba'ath Party, was shot dead in a drive-by shooting while he was returning home from a market. Near Garma, four U.S. Marines drowned yesterday when their Abrams battle tank rolled off a bridge and fell into a canal near the village of Garma in western Anbar province. And in Tal Afar, George Bush's great success story, Iraqi police killed two insurgents on Thursday when they attacked a police patrol in the northern city of Tal Afar. In Baghdad, the Fadhila Party, a small but influential Shiite Islamist party, criticized U.S. interference and said it's pulling out of talks and forming a new government, a move which could help Shiite infighting over the key oil ministry. So that may or may not be good news. We'll see how it shakes out. Welcome back to our program. Our telephone number, toll-free all across the United States, 1-866-440-8466. And it's Friday. Pretty much anything you want to talk about, be glad to just, you know, bring it up and kick it around and see what's on your mind today, as well as others. D in New York City. Hey, D, what's up? D, you're going to have to speak up. I can hardly hear you.
Okay.
In fact, you're breaking up. D, I'm going to put you on hold. Maybe Dan can figure out what the problem is there. Gary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Gary.
Good morning, Tom.
Hey, Gary.
I saw the JFK last night on Discovery. I thought it was very solid. Objectively, I thought it was just great.
Well, thank you. I didn't produce it, but I thought they did a pretty good job of characterizing our book. Although we do lay out, you know, the connections between Oswald and organized crime,
right.
You know,
I thought it was solid. I think that's the word I would use.
Yeah. Well, thank you. But that's not what you called about.
But anywho. Coming back, I just got back, but it seems to me that we're almost, more and more, we're in America here, we're almost doing a lot of work for the terrorists. I think that's a factor in their thinking, that they're just laying back waiting for us to divide even more.
Well, or encouraging it. I mean, what George W. Bush did after 9/11 was exactly what Osama bin Laden wanted him to do. And Bill Clinton didn't make that mistake. I mean, when Tim McVeigh blew up the federal building in Oklahoma City, he had read the Turner Diaries, which is this apocalyptic, you know, end times right-wing novel where a freedom-loving, all-American, red-blooded, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant guy blows up a federal building, and it causes the federal government to clamp down with something that looked like the Patriot Act and declare a state of emergency and militarize the United States and declare a war against the terrorists. And that causes all the good God-fearing, you know, white WASP folks in America to get their guns out of their closets and rise up against the government. And in the end of the Turner Diaries, all the Jews are dead, all the African Americans are dead, all the Latinos are dead, the Catholics are dead. The only people left standing are the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, and they have triumphantly taken the country back, right? And that's what right. Tim McVeigh thought he was going to do. He really thought he was going to inspire a revolution in the United States. So, Bill Clinton says, we're not going to give you that. Come on, give me a break. This guy's a criminal. We're going to prosecute him. We're going to track him down. And they didn't know. I mean, at the beginning, they thought it might be Osama bin Laden who'd done it. Mm-hmm. They still dealt with it like a crime and went after it as a crime. And therefore, the people of Oklahoma City were able to get closure. The bad guy got caught. The bad guy got prosecuted. The bad guy got put to death. End of discussion. And what George W. Bush did instead is he had, again, we were attacked by, you know, Osama bin Laden, apparently. And
right.
I say apparently, but you know, for purposes of argument. And what Bush does is he says, oh, we've got to have a war. And he does exactly what the government does in the Turner Diaries, almost as if he'd been reading this right-wing stuff, only he wanted it to work out this way. Well, maybe that's the case, actually. And he did exactly what Osama bin Laden wanted, turned Osama bin Laden from a marginal right-wing nut, viewed by Islamists as a right-wing nut. I mean, he had maybe 15, 20,000 people who'd been through his camps, maybe 5,000 people who actually believed in what he was doing, and he turned him into an international hero. It's crazy.
It's more than that. And I wonder. I just heard a poll. Maybe you can, I'll close it up, and maybe you can comment on it. What do you make of this initial poll about Americans? I believe I heard something in the area of about 60%. They more or less think it's okay to have the our telephones programmed like this.
Yeah, this is the bottom line
here. Correct me if I'm mistaken. We better step up to the plate. It's getting late in the game.
Yeah. Well, see, that's why I brought this up with Victoria. I brought it up with Bernie. I want to bring it up with as many people as I can. The problem is Americans think that this is entirely in the context of terrorists. Just like in Germany in the early days when Hitler was saying, we've got to go after the guys who burned down the Reichstagsgebäude. That's the equivalent of burning down the Capitol building, right? They burned down the Capitol building in Germany, and he said, we've got to go after these terrorists. And all the people of Germany were like, yeah, we got to do that. And he said, and I need police powers to do that. I need the power to tap phones and open mail and break into people's houses without a warrant. And they said, yeah, we'll give you that power.
This is another indication where the wealth... You follow my logic here. This is another indication, a classic indication, I think, where wealth is so entrenched in our country that it's distorting standing up and saying, no, we're not going to put up with this.
Yeah. Well, I would say it goes way beyond wealth, Gary. I would say it goes right to the heart of the corruption of the Republican Party. What Hitler did was he grabbed power. He used a national tragedy to grab power. Whether he created that national tragedy or not is literally still being debated. I mean, there was a book published in Germany just a couple of years ago saying Marius von der Lubbe was acting alone. They're still arguing about it. And ultimately, there were 6 or 7 people who were arrested and executed for that thing, including von der Lubbe, for burning the parliament building in Germany. But he used a national disaster to grab power, and then he used that power against his political enemies. And why is the Democratic Party not raising the issue of the possibility of George W. Bush using this information against his political enemies, because he certainly believes that politicians who oppose him are enemies in the classic, you know, capital E enemy context or form of the concept. Jessica in Redmond, Washington. Hey, Jessica.
Hi, I'm on. Oh, great.
You are.
Yeah. It was wonderful to hear you and Bernie this morning. I admire you so much and learn so much from you, too. And I did see you last night on Discovery. I taped it for some of my friends who couldn't see it.
Okay.
Well, I wanted to tell you that, oh, also before I forget, I want to tell you that I'm going to see you in June at Seattle Townhouse, so I'm really looking forward to that.
I am, too. I'm just doing our travel plan.
I saw you last time with Rachel Maddow and so forth, and you were so good. I can't believe you got a 33-year-old son. My God, what do you do to
yeah.
that age?
Well, she's a daughter. We have, our son is 27, but yeah.
I thought you said your son was 33.
No, we have girl, boy, girl. So,
oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. Anyway, it's unbelievable. Anyway, I wanted to tell you that I called Verizon. When I found out about this, I was so angry, and I thought, well, how can they get by with that? So when I finally got a voice with a body, I asked, you know, where they were. I said, are you in America? Are you an American? She did say yes, but she knew my number and where I was calling from. Mm. So anyway, I just told her how angry I was over Verizon caving into Mr. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are just doing this all over, and it's kind of like, it's just another thing to be so angry about. It's not just the oil, the war, and I'm like all other Americans, but I told her, I said, I'm an American-born citizen, I'm a grandma, I'm a Democrat, I volunteer for Maria Cantwell right now, and I did for Carrie Edwards, and I still have my bumper sticker on my car, and I just go ha, ha, ha as I drive around.
Yeah, it's time for us to bring out the bumper stickers that say, don't blame me, I voted for Kerry.
That's a good one. You know, the audacity, I went to the grocery store the other day and somebody put a big red loss sign over my, but I peeled it off. Fortunately, I could still keep my bumper sticker. But anyway, I asked if I could be...
Wait a minute, somebody put graffiti on your Kerry Edwards bumper sticker?
They put a red sticker over it that said lost.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So there's Republicans out there looking for people who have Democratic bumper stickers.
Redmond is Microsoft's home. But anyway, I just asked if I could be switched to Quest, and she said no. And I said, oh, well, that's another right that Americans have lost. They used to be able to, after they broke up AT&T, you could get any hotel.
That's right.
That
was the whole point of the discussion that we had just a minute ago, which is monopolies. And they, you know, we've got a lot to deal with in this country. Thank you very much for the call. Great to hear from you. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
We're wussies for war, wussies for war. We don't even know what the war is for, but we will expedite it if somebody else will fight it, cause we're gung-ho.
We won't go wussies for war.
Indeed, the old Chicken Hawk song. Welcome back, my friends. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Coming up on 9 minutes before the hour, breaking news, the FBI, this is from CNN, the FBI searched the home and office of former CIA Executive Director Kyle Dusty Fago. A law enforcement official told CNN, Fago, who is the spy agency's third-ranking official, is part of a broad law enforcement investigation into allegations of corruption, according to officials familiar with the probe. Search warrants were executed Friday at his CIA office and his home in Northern Virginia. So that on the one hand. On the other hand, yesterday, I already shared that with you. Let's get back to the phone lines here. 1-866-440-8466. Nancy in Randolph, Vermont. Hey, Nancy, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I just have a question. I was going to ask Bernie, but he's off, so I'll ask you what your thoughts are on electronic voting machines.
Oh, and I can tell you Bernie's thoughts on it. He's on the record pretty explicitly. He's signed on with Rush Holt's bill. He's very concerned about it. And my take on it is that the vote is part of the commons. It's the most important part of the commons, because it's how we administer the ultimate commons, which is the government, which administers all the rest of the commons, our national forests, our police departments, our fire departments, our schools, everything else. And therefore, the vote should not be privatized. It should not be in the hands of private corporations, period.
Well, on top of that, I understand that computer specialists have questions, too, about such things as logic bombs and backdoors.
Oh, yeah. And yeah. I mean, this is all very insecure.
Right. And so I don't know why there isn't a great effort to change even back to what, you know, paper ballots if necessary.
This is what Canada did 3 years ago. They tried voting machines 4 years ago. They tried voting machines for one election cycle, didn't like it, and got rid of them.
Well, that's what I'd like to see here, because I don't have confidence in the voting the way the process is set up.
Yeah, well, I agree. And I would suggest that you get a hold of Deb Markowitz, your Secretary of State there in Vermont, and everybody in their own state should do the same, get in touch with their Secretary of State, and tell them that that's how you're thinking, that's what you're feeling. And also contact your local officials, your county or municipality election officials. These people are not stooges and toadies of Diebold. They're good people trying to do their jobs, and it's not an easy job in many cases. But they're getting incredible pressure from the federal government, and not to mention billions of dollars, not, you know, local municipalities getting billions, but the Help America Vote Act allocated almost $4 billion for local municipalities and counties to buy these electronic voting machines from companies that are by and large owned by Republicans. Senator Chuck Hagel of Nebraska used to be the head of the company, which is now ES&S Voting Machines. Wally O'Dell, the head of the Bush for Ohio Committee, was the president of Diebold. I mean, you know, it's not a healthy thing. And that's probably why the Republicans are so gung-ho on voting machines. But I'd say, you know, let your local election officials know that you have a concern about it. I can tell you, though, that Bernie already is very concerned about this, and it's right at the top of his list. So thanks a lot, Nancy. Great to hear from you. Dave in Fullerton, California. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I am just great, but I'll get better. What's up, Dave?
Well, for first, I'm real glad you do substitutions occasionally for your other colleagues because that's how I discovered you, and I'm real glad I did.
Oh, thank you.
I was wondering if you had happened to hear about the Thomas Nelson case up in Oregon at all.
Refresh my memory.
This is been reported on Alternet on May 8th and a couple of other places, but it's really absent from the mainstream. This is a Oregon attorney, Portland, Oregon attorney, who did work for Muslims, Islamics, et cetera, after 9/11, who were being deported, et cetera.
Right.
And he happened to do some work for a charity that was being investigated for supporting terrorism. At any rate, this man, it's become apparent that he has got probably the first hard evidence on this NSA illegal wiretap situation.
Mm. Yeah, that they were spying on him.
They were spying on him. They were spying on him. They broke several laws, the attorney-client privilege.
Right.
They actually gave him the evidence by accident in the discovery process, yep. A log, and they actually disclosed the information that they were getting from the illegal wiretaps to the Treasury Department, which then used it to seal the client's bank accounts.
Yeah, I recall when that happened. It was fairly widely publicized here in Oregon. It is, and then it got very quiet very quickly because this is like all going into litigation and nobody's talking about it out in public very much.
Yeah, the document itself was turned over to a federal judge who has got it under seal now.
Yeah.
But the point on this case that makes it so interesting, and also he was a close friend of his was Mayfield. Who was implicated?
Right, Brandon Mayfield.
Exactly.
The guy who got busted because they said that a fingerprint like his, he's a Muslim who lives here in Oregon, and they said that a fingerprint like his showed up in Spain in the Spain bombing, when in fact nothing of the kind happened, and he got arrested and locked up, and you know, no due process, and just he got the whole treatment, right? The whole Jose Padilla treatment. And now I believe he's suing.
The real interesting thing, though, about this is that the laws that were broken, I feel, are the attorney, first, of course, the warrantless wiretaps, the attorney-client privilege, and then they broke into this man's office and were caught breaking into his office and his home.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, in fact, I remember one of the details of that. The way that he figured it out is when they were breaking into his office. He was in his office at night, and this guy wearing shiny black shoes and nice clothes, who speaks perfect English, comes in and says, "I'm the janitor." Exactly. And immediately he goes, "Oh, wait a minute, not in this country, you're not." And that's how he figured out that the guy was from the NSA or from the CIA, or he was being bugged. Yeah, interesting story, Dave, and one that deserves more publicity. Perhaps I can get this guy on. We'll look into it. It's 57 minutes past the hour. In the next hour, we're going to have Al Martin here, the editor of AlMartinRaw.com, talking about what the oil companies are up to, and then we'll be taking your phone calls for the rest of the program. Stick around.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, syndicated by Air America Radio, the place where reason is our lifestyle choice. Al Martin is with us. He's the founder and editor of AlMartinRaw.com. Hey, Al, welcome to the program. Or should I say, welcome back. Al? He's on the line, but he's not on the line. Huh. Well, maybe if Al shows up, I don't know. You sure you have him on the... Well, I'll tell you what. I'm gonna move along, and if you can, Dan, if you can figure out how to get Al on here. Hey, Al, you there? Al Martin?
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. We had you on the wrong side of the board. Hey, Al, welcome to the program.
Nice to be with you, Tom.
Thank you. The rise in gas prices is due to the egregious profits that the Bush-Cheney regime has allowed in refiners' profit margins?
That is one cause that I think does not receive enough media attention. And even in financial media, we see CNBC, Bloomberg, most notably, that the egregious increase, 11-fold increase, in refiners' profit margins that have been allowed under this regime, in fact, has added about $20 a barrel to the cost of domestic crude. And we see that in refined product at the pump and in home heating costs.
Now, let me get this straight. The $20 a barrel increase, I mean, the price of crude oil has gone up on the international markets, not just the domestic market. Are you
Tom, you're absolutely correct. The price has gone up on international markets, certainly. But we would not have the level of retail prices in the United States had this regime not taken off the old FERC, or Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, profit margin caps, which had existed, which were $2 a barrel, which had existed for many years prior to 2001.
That's what I wanted to get to, Al Martin, because I didn't know that those FERC caps even existed, and I suspect that most people don't know about this. It's certainly not a story that has, to the best of my knowledge, ever been covered in the mainstream media. When did the FERC, first of all, what these caps said was that an oil refinery could make up to $2 a barrel refining oil into gasoline in profit, in net profit, net-net after all is said and done, but they couldn't make any more than that, right?
Effectively correct. A refiner, domestic refiner, as profit margin was capped at $2 a barrel, turning that barrel of crude oil into derivative product, including gasoline, heating oil, LNG, that's liquefied natural gas, etc.
Yeah.
And the current regime, the Bush-Cheney regime, was very quick in 2001 to remove those caps and not replace them with any other cap, and effectively offer tax incentives to the refinery industry to increase their profit margin. And we now see, for instance, it's a weekly statistic that you can find on, for instance, Platts Oil News Service, which you can see on the Internet. But last week, for instance, we see that the nationwide average refiner's profit margin was $22.76 a barrel.
So So you're suggesting that the reason why gasoline is running around $3 a gallon right now is in part because that $2 maximum profit that they used to make on a barrel is now $20, and there's, what, about 50 gallons of gas in a barrel of oil? And so that would be about, what, a dollar a gallon? No, it would be about a third of a dollar, about 35 cents a gallon.
It's 42 gallons in a barrel,
40,
as traded on the
so NYMEX. So we're talking about 50 cents a gallon. Yeah.
In other words, had those caps been retained, Tom, you would see gasoline 50 cents a gallon lower at the pumps.
So when did FERC first get put into place? Where did this originate?
FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, is a very old federal agency. First put in immediately prior to the United States' entrance into the Second World War.
Hmm.
Its original intent was to limit the rise in domestic fuel prices during the war, and to help the Washington-based rationing board more evenly ration the nation's supply of domestic fuels during the war. And it of course, its purpose has changed over the years, but it really, by the 1980s and 1990s, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission was simply a commission that was now in business to do nothing more than to prevent domestic refineries from raising prices and further pressuring the price of crude oil.
Mm-hmm. Now, isn't there something to be said for the Bushies' point of view that if you have a free and competitive market, that will ultimately work to the benefit of consumers in the marketplace? I mean, my response to that would be that we don't have a free and open competitive market. We have four companies. It's a cabal. But you take a shot at it, Al.
Well, you're right. I mean, is it really a free and competitive market? Remember, the regime has adopted a twofold strategy vis-a-vis oil prices. Not only has it removed all limits on refiners' margins, but it has done everything possible through political and economic policy to increase the price of a barrel of oil. Part of that certainly has been by removing tax incentives for domestic drilling and production that previously had existed. Lest we forget, under this regime, domestic oil production has declined by more than 1 million barrels a day.
Although some suggest that that's a natural consequence of peak oil here in the United States as well. I mean, couldn't you just as easily make the case, and probably perhaps even more damningly, that one of the most effective ways that the Bush administration and starting with the Reagan administration, I mean, the cons have been doing this since Reagan, that one of the most effective ways that they have been driving up the price of oil is by driving up the demand for oil by fighting against alternative energy supplies and technologies in the United States.
That is certainly part of the equation, Tom. You would note that this regime reversed approximately 83% of the monetary value of tax incentives that had been offered under the previous Clinton-Gore regime for the development of alternative energy. Furthermore, it loosened the so-called CAFE standards, which led to an enormous increase in production of SUVs, the size
right.
of which could tow a battleship.
Right, which increases demand, which drives up price. Yeah, over on your website, almartinraw.com, we're speaking with Al Martin, the editor founder of almartinraw.com. You have your behind the scenes in the Beltway column, your most recent column from this week. New threat looms, South America begins renationalization of resources and what it means to you. And you talk about Evo Morales in Bolivia and so on. What does it mean to us, in your opinion?
Simply put, Tom, you begin with the premise, as I begin with and as I've been writing about recently, that the United States is a power in decline, according to the IMF, and that, in fact, Russia and China are now the two rising powers on this planet. The nationalization, which is effectively a renationalization of commoditized resources occurring south of the border at an ever-increasing pace, is different than the nationalization that happened in the 1970s and 80s in those countries, which failed terribly, certainly for those countries, in that they had effectively only one customer, the United States, for the commodity products. Now they have more than one customer. And indeed, their preferred customers are now Russia and China, who are prepared to enter into longer-term contracts than are any U.S. business enterprises to purchase South American commodities. They're prepared to pay more money. They are prepared to fund contracts up front. They are prepared to insert technical and military advisors, as they have already, China has already agreed to do in Bolivia.
Yeah. And increasingly,
Russia will be doing in Argentina.
And increasingly, India is a customer as well. So we have less than a minute left. We're talking with Al Martin, AlMartinRaw.com. Al, what's the bottom line for America and for Americans? What should we expect?
The bottom line is that the United States, the American empire is an empire in decline, gratis of Bushonomics. That, in fact, what Bushonomics is doing and Bushonian political policy in general is making us future dependent on commodity resources, which will be increasingly controlled by Russian and Chinese entities.
And a small elite associated with the Bush Empire.
And a small collateral elite within the Bushonian Empire.
Yeah, the Bush, Halliburton, the Cheneys, the you know, fat bastard, excuse me, Lee Raymond from Exxon. And
Mr.
All
Jowls.
The, yes. Good old Lee. Well, we even have our...
Come here, I'm going to eat you. I'm bigger than you. I'm higher in the food chain.
There you go. Anyway, Al Martin, AlMartinRaw.com, his website. Al, thanks for being with us.
Good to be with you, Tom.
That was our official Lee Raymond theme there, Al. It's 16 minutes past the hour. We'll be back.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, and I wonder, yes, I wonder, when life's meant to be.
And welcome back, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, nope. Not a chance. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, Craig in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Craig.
Good morning, Tom. The reason I'm calling is last night I was at Randy Rhodes.
Uh-huh.
There was a gentleman who called in, and there's a book written about how the original data mining was done by the Nazis with the IBM punch cards.
Yes, that book came out about 6 years ago. I have a copy of it. You still there, Craig? Craig?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, I lost you there.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I said the book came out about 6 years ago. I have a copy of it.
Yes, and it was just when they brought up this whole data mining thing and how the Nazis used it when every village that they went into, they automatically were able to use the punch card system to know what people's religions were, what their jobs were. So when they moved people in and out of towns, they now knew if you, what your profession suited them for that purpose, they could instantly get a hold of you, and whatever religion you were, they could mark it so they could put you in the proper categorization.
That's right, and they used this when they were organizing the Holocaust, when they were organizing the mass slaughter of the Jews.
Yes, and this was before we had computers. This was the original data mining. When you look at the amount of information, the ability we have to transfer from one place to another now, yeah. I heard that last night, and it just scared the bejesus out of me because these people are so untrustworthy.
Yeah, well, I missed Randy's rant on that, but apparently it was a solid one. I've been getting phone calls on it this morning, in fact. It's true. I mean, it did happen, and the Nazis did use it, and they used it originally saying that this is just, you know, what we're going to do to stop the enemies of the state, you know, the guy who burned down the Parliament building, and then they turned it against their political enemies. Absolutely.
This whole security thing is just how you manipulate the people. I mean, it's all about terror, and the scary part is that the greatest terrorists, it seems, are the ones who seem to be running things here, but that's just my opinion.
And I agree with you. Craig, thanks for the call. Good point. And here's the second. Here's where it goes from here. Back when Scooter Libby was first busted, or they were first talking about busting him, this was in October of 2005, October of last year, Fox News started putting out a meme. You know, a meme, a thought virus. And this, the clips I'm going to share with you, this was put together by the folks over at Think Progress, is a compilation of Fox News anchors. Now, none of these were guests bringing these things up. This originated within the bowels of Fox News. This is Rupert Murdoch, Roger Ailes, whoever. So deep in the bowels of Fox News, this is Chris Wallace, followed by Sean Hannity, followed by Stuart Varney, followed by Bill O'Reilly, followed by William Kristol. And as you're listening to this meme that Fox News put out, think about how effectively a government could criminalize politics if they had all the information on the activities and communications of all of their citizens.
Yeah. Michael, the criminalization of politics. Mike, go ahead.
I hate the criminalization of politics, but I'm worried there will be indictments.
I tell you what worries a lot of people. This is a sign of the criminalization of politics. Now, that's a concern for a lot of people on both sides of the
aisle. And I now think, and I hate the criminalization of politics, and I think it's really ridiculous when you step back and say, of all the leaks that have come out in the last 4 or 5 years,
question, is there something here involving the criminalization of politics, that what we do now is destroy, in this case, Republicans who have been whipping Democrats for years?
And on Karl Rove, I very much want to agree with you, Bill, though. I am worried about what happens to the administration if Rove is indicted, and I think it's a criminalization of politics that should have
been indicted.
Totally out of hand.
It's just bad for the country. No.
Yeah, the criminalization of politics. Now, one of the things that you perhaps have noticed over the years is that when the conservatives are going to move in a particular direction, they always label their opponents with that direction. For example, when the cons decided that they were going to start handing off huge tax breaks to the elites, they started talking about the liberal elites. So now they're talking about the liberals, the Democrats, criminalizing political activity. And this was a major meme on Fox News about, 6 months ago. And now it's kind of dropped off the radar screen. It just has vanished. Is it going to come back? Is it going to come back in the form of it being criminal to being political, to be political? In fact, the Patriot Act is, very, very broad, makes it very clear that even engaging in an activity that has economic consequences can be considered terrorism, and if it's terrorism, then all bets are off with regard to the Constitution. The Patriot Act just renewed and empowered, strengthened by the Bushies, by this Bush regime and the people associated with it, the Republicans in the House and the Senate. At what point will it become a crime to be a Democrat? And will you have to worry that maybe you called somebody who was a Democrat or who was a Democratic activist who was involved in Democratic politics? Because now your phone records are on file. We'll ask John Conyers, Congressman John Conyers from Michigan, that and a few other questions right after this. It's 27 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it all started with O.J. running in his old white Bronco.
Where's O.J.?
Running from the law with a bloody glove. He hit the road. And here we are in the middle of a war with clamor, fighting to be free.
It's a mass destruction.
There's a Patriot Act at home. Martin, you and me. But it's water under the bridge when the next thing you know is a new spicy sex tape. Or reality show, it's crossed the line. Jessica Simpson's made.
Mass destruction.
Yes, I'm so sick and tired of all this bullshit on my TV.
It's the bullshit.
Time it ain't as entertaining as entertaining.
Okay, welcome back, my friends. Yeah, pushing the limits there, I guess. Welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. John Conyers is going to be with us in just a moment. First, Barbara in, is it Camano Island, Washington?
Camano Island.
Camano. Thank you, Barbara. What's up?
Well, I am a retiree of U.S. West, which became Quest. And back when I worked for the phone company, the phone company did track all long distance because they needed to bill, but they didn't do local tracking. Mm-hmm. So in an effort to reward and thank Quest for doing the right thing, I think that we should all pick Quest as our long-distance carrier, because even though that woman talked to Verizon and they said, no, you can't change your phone company, you can change your long-distance carrier.
Interesting. Okay, great. Well, thank you, Barbara.
You're welcome.
Thanks for that information. Uh-huh. And people can contact, I think it's Quest.com is the website. I know I have, you know, Quest is my phone company. Congressman John Conyers of Michigan is with us, one of my heroes and one of the finest men in the House of Representatives. John Conyers, Congressman Conyers, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure and honor to always be talking with you because you're doing good work even when I'm not on the program, and I enjoy it.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Congressman. You and Bernie Sanders and a number of other members of Congress have, just before all these revelations of the NSA data mining came out, of you know, gathering our phone numbers, had signed on to what looks to me like a legal action against the Bush administration.
It is.
With regard to the wiretapping, the illegal wiretapping. Tell us about that.
Well, first of all, Bernie Sanders and 70 other members joined him and I in filing an amicus brief, which is just a friend of the court document, but rarely have we ever had that many members, asking the federal court in the American Civil Liberties Union case that asked for a summary judgment for the plaintiffs against the president and those who've been involved in the warrantless wiretapping instance, in which he is still resisting the fact that there is no presidential authority in the Constitution as commander-in-chief or in any legislation that we've promulgated about the war in the Mideast. And so in the midst of that comes a new revelation that we've been mining the largest millions, one authority said 10 million names in a huge database, which is trying to track the associations of people who call them and who they call and see if there's any connection with Al-Qaeda. Now, this is out there just searching for leads like I've never heard in any other program.
Now, in a recent poll, apparently it was done overnight here, Congressman John Conyers, about two-thirds of Americans said they have no problem with that if it helps catch terrorists. But I don't think that anybody has brought up the next question. It's like, you know, Hitler got the Enabling Acts passed because he was trying to find out who burned down the Parliament building. And nobody realized that he would use all that information, you know, against other people, against people beyond just the terrorists. When are the Democrats going to step up to the plate and start asking in the public media the question, when is the Bush administration going to start using all this information that they're gathering to track Democrats? I mean, we've already seen them do it. They had tapped into Teddy Kennedy's computer for a year and a half.
Really?
And
now that's news to me.
Okay, well, this was actually, maybe because it's over in the Senate, but there's a guy who actually got busted for this. This was about 2 years ago. And there was a fellow who was arrested for hacking into Teddy Kennedy's computer, and he was passing off to Bill Frist and other Republicans information about the strategies that the Democrats were using.
Incredible.
On the judges, you know, appointments, you know.
The hearings on the nomination.
That's
confirmation
right.
Hearings.
Confirmation hearings. Thank you very much. And so we know right now that the Republicans, I mean, right there in Washington, D.C., will use data if it's available to them for partisan political purposes. When are they going to start using this information that they've been gathering to find out who's talking to whom in the Democratic Party and try and short-circuit that?
Well, we don't know. And, you know, the thing that gets me, Tom, is that these things come out one by one. It's like they keep digging a hole, and somebody forgot to tell President Bush, if you really want to stop the hole from getting deeper, you stop digging, first of all. We keep getting, every week, there's something new coming out on top of what came out the week before.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. On top of, or in between all of this, here they nominate the man that was in charge of warrantless wiretapping for NSA, and it turns out he's a military general as well, and so there are two strikes against him going in the first place, and we thought we were doing something positive by accepting the resignation of Porter Goth. Well, it turns out we're going to get the guy that was running warrantless wiretaps for all this period of time.
Yeah. And
it never stops. And it shows to me that we've got an administration that's in turmoil. It's out of control. And there are a lot of Americans that recognize this as the president's poll numbers keep going down to new record lows. But the good news for them is that Vice President Cheney has climbed from 18 to 20 points in terms of popularity. So I don't know what that tells us to worry for next. But the whole idea is that most people are getting the fact that that he is using terrorism as a tool to intimidate, to invoke patriotism, and to cover some of the most egregious blunders in foreign policy and in intelligence work that I've ever known in my career in Congress.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Congressman John Conyers, the accumulation or the gathering up of tens of millions or perhaps hundreds of millions of telephone records by this administration, the NSA, on the one hand, could be a very wise move to protect the United States. And you would think if that's all it was, that they would have gone to the trouble of getting a warrant. And that's why Quest said no, and the other three companies apparently didn't have good lawyers. But if it's not for the purposes of protecting America, then what might it be for?
Well, there's only one other reason left for me, is for political purposes. And by the way, getting FISA court approval is one of the easiest things that they could be asked to do, since they've only refused in the last few years only five such applications.
Yeah.
So it tells me that, first of all, there's something else we're going to find out next week. We don't know what it is yet. That's going to be revealed for the first time. That's going to embarrass the government, because they just don't want to adhere to the established rules, the law, the constitutional guidelines that have been put out, protecting the right of privacy, the Fourth Amendment. It seems not to be in them.
What can we as Americans do about this, Congressman Conyers?
Well, first of all,
we have just 1 minute left. I'm sorry.
Yeah, quite all right. We have the responsibility to find out whether all 435 members and a third of the senators are really for some change, or are they really mouthing disturbances. There's one senator in the other body who, when something happens, at first he comes out outraged. He's got to get to the bottom of it. And then when we hold a hearing, it turns out that he's been satisfied and everything is hunky-dory.
Oh, is that Pat Roberts or Arlen Specter or both?
I
you don't want to say.
Disclose the person.
Yeah.
I'm
well, I'm just watching their public behavior. You know, Pat Roberts, we're going to get to the bottom of this stuff, and then later, we'll delay the release of that. And, you know, yesterday, Arlen Specter, oh, this is terrible. And in a week it'll be, well, you know, we just have to kind of let bygones be bygones.
Right. Well, but here's the counting time.
Yeah, it, and the counting time is the election.
2006.
There you
the
go.
The elections of November.
John Conyers, Congressman John Conyers of Michigan, johnconyers.com is your website. Is that correct?
That's right. The
That's
one
right.
that people don't want me to continue showing.
Okay, johnconyers.com.
Tom Hartman, continue the good work and have a good weekend.
Thank you, and you too, sir. Thank you very much. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
You gave them the old razzle-dazzle. You razzle-dazzled them.
Oh, you sure did, George.
You gave them an act with lots of flash in it. Made them believe you were compassionate.
It seemed to work.
You gave them the old hocus-pocus. You misdirected them with 9/11 and Saddam Hussein. You played them both right to perfection, despite the fact there's no connection. You razzle-dazzled them, let those blue states complain.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Welcome back. The place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Dick in Seattle. Hey, Dick, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom, I wanted to comment on the ABC poll on illegal NSA eavesdropping, and also wanted to comment on your Discovery Channel program a little bit. But, you know, about the ABC Washington Post poll, you know, the phrasing and the context for these poll questions is critical to the results that we get. And most of these questions from our right-of-center media, you know, they have, at least I notice, a very discernible bias, you know, but you have to look for it. And so, you know, there's nothing about who the responders were that they're asking. I mean, you need to have more background information to understand how you're getting these results, and I hold them very suspect.
Yeah, I agree with you.
In regards to the Discovery Channel offering, you know, the program that you were on I thought was better than most of the others, but that's really not saying much, you know, given that most of the others that I've seen have been pure disinformation, propaganda, and cover-up.
Okay.
And,
well,
Dick,
thank you very much. I appreciate it. I don't want to get into either arguing or defending the program. I didn't produce the program. Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey. Hey, Paula, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Paula?
Yeah, well, actually, really, what that gentleman said is important as far as the phrasing of the question. I'm sitting
yes.
here looking at the release report of the poll.
And how is the question phrased?
I'll read it to you. It has been reported that the National Security Agency has been collecting the phone call records of tens of millions of Americans. It then analyzes calling patterns in an effort to identify possible terrorism suspects without listening to or recording the conversations. Would you consider this acceptable or unacceptable way for the federal government to investigate terrorism? Do you feel that way strongly or somewhat?
Wait, is that a loaded question? It doesn't mention the fact that this is illegal.
No,
it doesn't mention the fact that we're being told that that's what they're using it for, but in fact we have no idea what they're using it for.
And there's the question before that was, what do you think is more important right now? For the federal government to investigate possible terrorist threats, even if that intrudes on personal privacy, or for the federal government not to intrude on personal privacy, even if that limits its ability to investigate possible terrorist threats?
Wow. As if it's those are the only two options.
Exactly. And there's nothing about the legality. There's nothing in there about violating the Fourth Amendment right.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Paula, thank you for that. And by the way, where'd you find that?
It's actually Raw Story.
Okay.
And then they
great.
Link to the ABC press release, and then there's a link on the press release to the full survey.
Great. I'll check it out. This stuff has been breaking as I've been on the air all morning, and I'm a little bit behind the curve, but I appreciate the heads up. Thank you, Paula.
My pleasure, Tom.
Appreciate it. John in Everett, Washington. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on you've been discussing how this administration is somewhat like what happened in Nazi Germany with the Reichstag fire, et cetera. And I'd like to agree with that. And it goes from not only to data mining, but it goes right on down to I stand on a street corner at least two or three times a week with a sign that says Bush is a fascist. And on the other side, it says impeach the fascist.
Right.
And I have people pull up to me, always white males on either Harleys or in jacked up four wheelers, saying that I'm going to get my butt kicked or I'm going to get shot.
Mm.
And I relate these to basically the collaborators in the 1930s and late 1930s with the Nazis. But also the fact is, the roots of the CIA as well go back to
the Nazis.
The Nazis.
Yeah,
and
after World War II. Yeah, after World War II, when the OSS was converted into the CIA, a lot of Nazis were brought into the CIA. But that doesn't mean that the CIA today is a Nazi organization.
No.
Plus, this is the NSA that's doing this. I'm far more concerned with the fact that you have an administration which is essentially acting like a political animal, directing an intelligence agency to do something that is fundamentally illegal, and that intelligence agency is not saying to the president. I mean, the NSA should have said to the president, "I'm sorry, Mr. President, but we don't have the legal authority to do this. You bring us the legal authority, and we will do this."
Well, he's already stated what his legal authority is, and that is that
he can do anything
above the law. He
right.
says it's okay, just like Richard Nixon said it was okay in the early 1970s. And the fact is, if people don't stand up, largely, in mass, we are going down the fascist road. We are way farther down it than anybody admits, and that goes for all these Democratic politicians who say, oh, we don't want to mention that.
Yeah. No, and the Democrats are cowering just like the Social Democrats were in Germany in the 1930s.
Appreciate it, Tom.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you, John. I really and truly don't think that George W. Bush is anywhere near as off the edge as Adolf Hitler was. And I really do believe that we can pull this thing back, because America, we still at least have the right to speak up and to speak out. I would not be on the air in Nazi Germany. It would not have been tolerated after the first couple of weeks of that administration. So we still have the opportunity to bring this thing back. We can do it. Get active, my friends. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.